Clinging. The topic today is, what is really the nature of clinging? And we've been talking about this with the Mahatanhaya Sutta, which means the great sutra on clinging, or a great teaching on clinging. There is an article, which I'm going to give you a link to, that I read yesterday. It's just written, and it talks about research that was done by the CIA in the 1970s and 80s about breaking through time-space continuum based on a method that was developed by a person named Robert Monroe. And he created something called the Gateway System. You can look this all up. And through combination of various training, he worked and affected consciousness. So the CIA was really interested in this because the Russians, they got word that the Russians had, and I know this for a fact, in fact, because this was exactly when I had just entered university. And the first year of university, I wanted to study parapsychology or paranormal phenomena. And I got in touch with Dr. J.B. Ryan, who was the leading professor in the United States at Duke University in North Carolina or South Carolina, I don't remember where. This is 1971. And at that time, the Russians were miles ahead of the Americans in all the research into ESP and psychokinesis, which means moving things without touching them, about reading minds, about clairvoyant vision. They had really put a lot of research into this, and America was very nervous because they were using it for military purposes. So they pushed the CIA to look into this whole experience, and they hired somebody who's in this article, you can read about it, some colonel, to go research it. And he did a very thorough research into it, and they spent years, and they have millions of pages of documents about this. And this article talks about it. It's very interesting, and it talks about the Gateway experience. So I've given you the link. I didn't want to bring anything from the article specifically, but what I wanted to share is the concept of the universe as a hologram. And there's a American Israeli scientist named Yitzhak Ben-Tov, who was very much a part of this. He passed away. He was a very interesting kind of guy and wrote a lot about different stuff. I think the interesting thing is that I never quite understood, or I now realize I never quite understood what they meant by a hologram in the universe. And this article, suddenly it all clicked. So I'm sharing this with you because I think this is really interesting for the reason that this is exactly what I understood the Buddha to be teaching, as my teacher taught to me, and I hope to communicate it to you. The universe we talked about is energy, right? We talked about molecules and atoms and quantum physics a bit. And we talked about how it's information. Do you remember we talked about information sharing? Its actual reality is information. Well, apparently, when we really go into deep quantum physics, we see that there is no real existence of matter unless it has the interaction between the two pieces of particles, the actual matter part, which is the energy. So without the energy, nothing forms. So far, so good. So if we imagine here's something called A, here's something called B, we can't experience, or anybody can't experience this as physical form until there's a connection between the two. And the connection is strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force, or electromagnetic force, or gravity, or whatever other nuclear forces they're now discovering. Everybody understand what I mean? And so I would always say to people, in an atom, which consists of a nucleus, and we'll talk simply about hydrogen, which is one proton, positive, one neutron, neutral, and one electron spinning around, negative. In this atom, or a uranium atom, which is 235 protons, neutrons, electrons, there is always 10 to the 49th power. That's 10 with 49 zeros after it, more empty space than solid matter. Think about that for a second. That means this hand that you see that I can't put my fingers through actually has 10 to the 49th power more empty space than solid. But why can't I put my hand through it then? Because of all those forces that are vibrating between the particles to keep it all together, to give it an appearance of solidity. Does that make sense to everybody?
Beautiful.
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, people talk about the ancient Hindu yogis that said they could walk through walls and stuff. Well, in theory, in real scientific theory, if this hand could vibrate at one rate, and this hand could somehow understand exactly the vibration rate, they should be able to go right through each other. Can it really happen? Has it ever happened? I don't know. It's an interesting concept. But what this article talks about in the research, which is interesting, is they start to tell us that the hologram is the image between the two particles. That's why they call it a hologram. And until there are two particles that define where the energy is going to move, we can't experience reality because our brains perceive in two dimensions. We need polarities, dialectic, not two dimensions, but dialectic. Yin and yang. So the reason we have this physical universe, everything, is because there's this vibration between these two particles. That's much I want to give right now. Do you understand? Everybody, does that make sense? Whether not without going too deep? Yes, no?
Yeah.
The idea, okay. Now, think about what the Buddha Dharma is teaching us. Dependent origination. There's condition, there's arising, there's result. There's our two polarity, right? From the origin, a dynamic occurs, and that dynamic occurs leading to another position. And that position is an energetic vibration that's defined by the Paticca-samuppada, the 12-step chain. Remember that chain? Of awareness, of sense, of perception, of feeling, of form materiality, of consciousness. These are the vibrations between the two poles that allow us to perceive what is real. What we call real, right? This physical form. Or the relative form. What's happening here is this is really demonstrating clearly that the Buddha was able to perceive the infinitesimal and microcosmic activity taking place. He didn't have the words like proton, neutron, electron, electromagnetic force, but he understood the dependencies between the two poles and the actual process of an energetic that created the reality that we think is real. And that's why we think it's real. But if we look into its construct, we start to understand that it's not really real unless we have those two polarities existing. So the minute you break the chain of the energetic arc, imagine an arc in a coil, the minute you break that chain, everything falls apart. You follow the model, at least the image in your mind? And so we have Nibbana. Nirvana. Everything doesn't disappear. There isn't nothingness. It's all there. It just stops this polarity and we go into this kind of, I don't even know how I would describe it, but probably this just beingness. I like that word. This there-ness, the suchness that Nagarjuna actually fought before that, Mahatmika. Everybody so far following me? Because what I'm about to say is very unique to what we are learning here together. Okay, and now we're going into an interpretation, just like we see different interpretations of Buddha Dharma over the last 2000 years, this is another interpretation of which there are other people out there also doing others today. The Buddha Dharma is the teaching of the nature of reality and how to integrate and assimilate completely into it through the extinguishing of karma and realization of Nibbana. That's my beginning point. We've talked about this before. After 60 years of practice, it's my current thinking because without recognizing the intention of the Buddha's from his original beginning point, I think we mislead ourselves and others in how to practice. If we recognize the original intention of the Buddha as being teaching us to the very nature of reality, and how to assimilate into that and integrate that and realize that leading to nirvana, then suddenly it makes sense. And suddenly the quantum explanation I just gave you before, do you see the connection? The nature of reality. However, there are many lessons and methodologies in his teachings that we can use on a daily basis just to live a happier and healthy life and more fulfilled and content life without us saying, oh, my goal is nirvana. Right? We don't all have to say, okay, everybody, that's right. Take off your clothes, put on your robe, shave your heads. From now on, that's it, nirvana. I think that's a wonderful thing to do. I haven't been able to do it yet in my life, but I don't think everybody's ready to do that for a lot of different reasons. And I think a lot of it has to do with karma. So without us saying, well, we want the ultimate, and that's it's ultimate or bust, as we say, we're saying there are other methodologies and there are practices in the teachings that we can use on a daily basis. And the more we do integrate these practices, the more we do start to eventually understand the nature of reality. Case in point, the more we practice mindfulness and attention and the jhanas during our life, the moment of death arrives, the more we're able to handle it in an acceptable, passable manner without the pain and the anguish that so often accompanies it. Clear? That's one simple example of what it can give as a benefit. So expounding the Dhamma is kind of like looking at the Buddha as a philosopher also. Start with the simple. So I wanted to read, I don't know how many of you are on our group quote, but there were three quotes last week that I think are very relevant to our discussion today. And before we get back to the sutra, the first quote was from Ajahn Chah, who was a great Thai monk. And I'll read it to you. There is plenty of time to meditate. We just don't fully understand the practice. That's all. While sleeping, we breathe. While eating, we breathe, don't we? Why don't we have time to meditate? Wherever we are, we breathe. If we think like this, then our life has as much value as our breath. And wherever we are, we have time to meditate. The breath. And I go over this every class and every time. It is the breath that is the fundamental. And that is why the Buddha said, here is the fundamental practice, anapanasati. There's never a reason not to be able to stop, even if it's for 30 seconds or 15 seconds or for 5 minutes or 2 minutes, and quiet yourself through the breath. And the more you practice, the more skillful you'll be. The second quote is from a great scientist called Nikola Tesla. You know the car, of course, but there was a scientist who he was named after. It is paradoxical yet true to say that the more we know, the more ignorant we become in the absolute sense. For it is only through enlightenment that we become conscious of our limitations. And what, again, how does this relate to the Buddha Dhamma? Dependent origination. The minute we understand dependent origination, origin, condition, situation, arising, result, suddenly we understand that those are the real limitations of reality. And suddenly all this fantasy we have about reality, we have to somehow fix that. Because if we keep having that fantasy of permanence, then there's going to be a major short circuit, right? And the last quote from another engineer, very interesting life he had, Alexander Graham Bell, who got the first patent on a telephone. When one door closes, another opens. But we often look so long and so regretfully upon the closed door that we do not see the one which has opened for us. That is what the Mahatanhaya Sankhya Sutta is all about. A door closes, a door opens. That's life. Things change. But why are we still looking at the door that's closed? What's causing that? What's that famous word? Today's word of the hour? Clinging. We're clinging to what's behind that door that's closed. It's gone. It's done. Why are we still clinging to it? Because if we cling to it and we don't turn around, we'll not see the door that's open, the opportunity that just presented itself. But here, there's also a hidden lesson. If a door closes and we can't face the door that's open, we're clinging to something behind that door. That gives us information about something that's happening inside ourselves, isn't it? And that gives us the opportunity to reach and say, why am I clinging? But I wouldn't say stay there until you realize that. I would say turn towards the open door, start to move, and think about during your sitting practice, why were you clinging? And then you'll learn about all the hidden patterns and habits that are inside us that we don't have in our conscious level, because those are the things that most likely make us cling to what is behind the closed door. Right? Any questions so far on our introduction? Any comments?
No.
Disagreements?
It's so hard to let go of that clinging.
It's really hard.
It's really hard.
It's really hard. But understanding that the clinging is driven most often by the clinging is referencing a situation of where something's happening that we're not aware of. And that's dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, and it is. And sometimes you know you're clinging and you try to stop it. And I don't know if anybody else has experienced this. And you try to stop it and you try to take that breath and you're still like, oh my gosh, you know, you just try to get through it. And it's really hard.
It's really hard. That's exactly correct. That is why he emphasized the breath. Because with the breath, you have a tool that won't work at first until you get good at it. Or it will work. It will work for about a second. I feel better. Oh, now I'm stressed again. I feel better. Now I'm stressed again. That's how it'll be at the beginning, if you even get to the exhalation. You know, it's like, I feel better. Oh, now I'm stressed. I can't even exhale. Okay. That's what it will be at the beginning. But as you practice, it will get easier and easier and easier. As you get good at it, you will learn to use the breath to bring you to another place. And it just is a matter of practice. This is why, interestingly enough, I believe that as Zen developed, the emphasis on the fine details of the Eightfold Path and all the jhanas, which is what Zen comes from, as we now know, was not so much brought out and discussed. What was more brought out and discussed was just pure awareness. Because no matter really how you approach it, you still have to do the practice. And the practice is pure awareness. And pure awareness is arrived at through the breath. Because until we have the breath to stop our mental papancha, if you recall that term, it's one of my favorite terms. I haven't used it too much, but mental proliferation, papancha. Until we can stop that hamster in our head running on that wheel. Everybody knows what a hamster is, right? Running on the wheel. We're stuck. And the breathing stops the hamster. Okay. But it takes time and it takes practice. And the most important thing is not to get discouraged. Because what will happen is when you least expect it, bingo, the change will suddenly happen.